Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have a fascinating guest today. I don't know about you, but I've always been amazed at search and rescue groups that use dogs to find people. And we've all watched programs on television where we've seen these phenomenal animals do their job, whether it's in an earthquake environment, they're searching for a child out in the middle of some forest. The stories are absolutely incredible, and I've had good fortune through the years of meeting people that have been involved with search and rescue. And today, we have as our guest Scott C. Hammond. He's written a book called Lessons of the Lost. And Scott has just an amazing background, and we're going to be talking about the search and rescue environment and what he has gained by being a part of this wonderful group of people and animals that make a difference in saving people's lives. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Donna.
This book was just absolutely wonderful. I met you in New York at the National Publicity Summit, and I have such a passion for dogs anyway, and I had the good fortune of knowing someone who was involved in search and rescue, and I know it takes tremendous dedication and training, and that's part of what your book is all about. How did you get involved in search and rescue? What was it that made you decide that you wanted to become a part of this group of people that are available 24/7 if necessary?
Well, it takes about 800 hours of training to get the dog ready. And actually, you think that that's for the dog. It's really more for me. I'm in my mid-50s, and I never thought most of my life that I would be doing this kind of work. But, you know, you ask me a little bit about how I came to this. I got lost myself once for about 20 minutes in the woods. But I realized just how deep a hole that you go into psychologically when you feel lost. And at about that same time, I lost my pet, you know, a golden retriever mm-hmm. that I'd had who had been a pet for 14 years, just this loyal, wonderful dog. And I wanted to do something more with a dog. And so I looked into training with a group called Rocky Mountain Rescue Dogs, which is we do searches in the Inner Mountain West area, and started to train my dog. I didn't realize it would be so much time and so much in demand, and even right now we have a search going on in the Rocky Mountains here that we're going to participate in today and tomorrow, and so my dog's a little tired right now. He's been working a lot this summer, and so I will take him tomorrow into the search zone, and we'll do a search. So we're just always involved in this and really love the work.
Well, I was mesmerized by the information in your book. I find that when I review your background information, you are a professor of organizational behavior in the Woodbury School of Business at Utah Valley University. Right there is that very analytical side, I guess we could call it the left brain side, that's in operation. You have done a lot of speaking, you're published, you're a former journalist, and you've been on ABC News, NBC News, all kinds of television programs. Yet this environment threw you into a whole different level of awareness. And when I was reading your material, and I'm going to quote from your book, Lessons of the Lost, you said, being lost is not a geographic problem. It's not first being a problem being in the wrong place. It's a mental problem. Lost people may be deprived of the basics of food, water, and shelter, but they are first deprived of meaning. When you restore meaning, you take the first steps towards hope, and hope is the beacon that leads you home. And that is what makes your book such a fascinating read. Because not only are you talking about search and rescue in the real world, but you're talking about the realities that people emotionally and mentally go through about being lost. So you bring the two worlds together into, I think, a fascinating read.
You know,
Why was this important to you? You mentioned you were lost for 20 minutes. What was the aha that you went through where you felt that this was important for you to write? Because I felt when you were writing this book, and correct me if I'm wrong, you were writing about yourself.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, for academics, as I am, it's very hard to write yourself into anything. You're trained to not do that. But I had an experience. The very first search I went on, I wasn't with my dog. My dog wasn't ready, but I had to go and observe. And I went on a search, and we were looking for a man in the Nevada desert. He'd been lost for 8 days, and we assumed that he had been deceased. And he was deceased, and they were looking for a body, and... you know, dogs are so good, as you pointed out, at finding. They hadn't used dogs in this particular case yet, and they'd been looking for 8 days, and in an hour and 10 minutes, we found him. And we found his body, and the dog handlers were dealing with, you know, taking care of their dogs. The police were dealing with the crime scene, because every unattended death is considered a crime until proven otherwise. And so here we are standing there, and this woman comes up to me, and it turns out that she's the wife of the victim, and she's crying, and she's sputtering, and she says to me this line that just pierces me to the heart. It's, you know, he was lost a long time before he went missing.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do in search and rescue is we really mostly look for missing people. Lost people very often get lost a long time before they go into the woods or the wilderness. And when we go into the woods in the wilderness and get lost, all of those feelings of inadequacy, this is what I found out when I got lost, all of those feelings of inadequacy, of shame, of I didn't do it right, or I did something stupid, or I'm a bonehead, or my goodness, I was, you know, 45 when I had my little lost incident, and I started thinking about my junior high school gym teacher yelling in my ear. You know, all of mm-hmm. these things that were negative that happened in your life start flooding back. And you realize that it's a mental problem first. It is first a problem about how you're thinking and where your heart is. And when you solve those issues, you can solve a lot of problems.
You talk about how when a puppy, and your wife wanted you to get a service dog after you lost your very good friend of 14 years, she said, get a service dog. Well, you didn't know anything about service dogs. And you talked in your book about a puppy. You want to start with a puppy. And a puppy has to display certain patterns. And what you do, you take a puppy, a food treat, you put it underneath a cup. And I don't know of a puppy that doesn't love to eat.
Yeah.
So the puppies, you talk about the first two puppies, once the treat was out of sight, they lost interest. But there was this one little puppy that pushed the cup around with his nose till it figured out how to knock the cup over and eat the treat. Now, I found it interesting, if they can find the treat, if they're persistent enough, in 20 seconds, that's not very much time, then that's a determination that that puppy will make a very good search dog.
Yeah, there are, you know, a lot of dogs can do this search work, but not every dog in the litter has the drive to do it. Most of them have the capability of doing it, but what you're looking for is a dog that has a victim loyalty, is the term we use, that they are so loyal towards that victim, that missing member of the pack, because it's a pack instinct that you're trying to tie into, that missing member of the pack, that they want to find him, they want to unify. It's a game or a drive for them to unify the family, the pack, and that's what drives them to look for lost people. And they love this work. You know, mm-hmm. dogs just love to do this.
Yes, they do. They absolutely do. When they are the one that is chosen to be trained, and this is their calling, so to speak, they do. This is what they wait for. They can hardly understand it. They must go and do what they know they can do well. Your dog, you said, trained you and helped you recover from the grief, the deep grief you felt over the loss of your friend. And you used the words, he brought you back from being lost. Now, I want to shift. You make a comment about people when they're out and when they get lost. You see, people who are suicidal are most likely to go up in direction if they're out in mountainous areas. Young children of a particular age are most likely to hide, while older kids will wander. Right-handed people are more likely to choose the right fork of a trail, while left-handed are most likely to choose the left. And fishermen, climbers, hunters all have profiles that predict where they might be. That is amazing to me. Have they kept records? Have they kept files? Is this a computer analysis? What has enabled them to get so specific regarding looking for people?
Well, you're absolutely right. They have kept a computer analysis, and every search, almost every search that happens, goes into a database, and you have these predictive ideas about where people would have gone. But the truth of the matter is that every search is absolutely unique. And so it gives you, when you have these statistics, it gives you probabilities. But that's all they are, probabilities. And every search is absolutely unique and is not necessarily determined by probabilities. And so sometimes when you go out, sometimes you never know really how long it will take. And so we have a person in Nevada that we've been looking for a year. We've had another search in Nevada that ended in an hour and 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. We have a search that I will go on tomorrow that has been going on for a couple of weeks. And so every event is different, and you have to account for those differences. That's where dogs are so important, because the dog doesn't understand the statistics or the probability or the human behavior. They just have a nose that's about 400 times more sensitive than ours. And so when I drive by Burger King with my dog, you know, I might smell a little bit of barbecue smell or cooking smell. He smells the whole hamburger and whether or not they're onions and whether or not the person ordered fries with that. I mean, he can smell at that level. And the same thing's true when you put him in a wilderness environment. He can tell you with his nose what's in that square mile around him. And if you tell him, I need to find a person, he'll take you to that person, and hopefully that's the person you're looking for. If you've got a track, if you know where that person has been and you've got a clothing item or something that you can give him a scent distinction with, then you can say, find that. You can get him to smell the sleeping bag or the clothing item that somebody had left behind and say, smell that and take me to that person, and they can do that. It's amazing to watch. I still get amazed that my little puppy, my little dog, can do this.
Mm-hmm. Let's switch again, because your book has this wonderful, compassionate, practical, down-to-earth communication about people that get lost in life. And all of us will go through those dark moments. And you make a comment about how lost people in work and life jettison career opportunities, relationships, family, religion, and moral values because they're not needed at the moment and appear to be contributing to their loss of meaning. Rather than reviewing, repairing, and repenting, they cut the line that could lead them home. And this disorientation, I like that word. I think it fits this. You're disoriented emotionally, mentally, spiritually. Then physically, your life reflects it because all is intertwined. And you reflect that in your stories here because you say it's very important that we have to learn how to deal with it. We have to learn how to trust. And then in companion with your dog rescue, search and rescue, wilderness learning, you say, is multidimensional. As you were putting this book together, was it easy for you to see these relationships when you were writing down your stories?
I think it was because I've spent a lot of time studying human behavior from a distance. That's what academics do. That's what we scholars do is, you know, you go into an organization and you stand back and you watch how people work. You don't become a part of that organization, or you keep on the edge of it. You stay on the edge of it and you watch how people work. And what search and rescue work did for me was put me right in the middle of it. But I brought those tools and those observation skills with me and began to collect the stories of victims, of people who had been lost. And I think that's what helped me see some of these insights. And the other thing I realized very quickly is that I had been lost. I think everyone's been lost. I don't think being lost is a unique thing. It is something we all experience at times in our lives. And I think you're, as you just said, the acknowledgement of that is a big step for us. That means that our children, our spouses, our the people we love around us will go through periods of lost as we stay with them throughout our lives, and we need to know that and acknowledge that and help them through that. And when they cut those relationships, then it is very difficult to come home. I have a daughter who's bipolar, and we've talked a number of times to why she's one of those rare people who really survived being bipolar, got through her teen years, and has been able to build a very, very happy life. But she still deals with being bipolar, and we've talked, and we've even talked in public to different groups about, why did you make it? Why did... Was she unique? And one of the things is that she kept a relationship with her mother and father and her brothers and sisters throughout that very difficult time when most of the other people with the similar kind of conditions were cutting those relationships. And they are so, it's so important to maintain those relationships. They motivate you to when you're lost in the wilderness, they're the motivation to be found, the motivation to solve the problem. They bring peace to your heart. They help you see clearly. You know, I hear every day when I am in my peaceful place and trying to be, I hear the voice of my grandmother in my head, and she's long since passed away, but that's an important relationship, and I still have it because you hear those voices, and they're still with us, and that's why these relationships are so important. And putting them in contempt or severing them or trying to forget them doesn't help when you're lost.
In the wilderness, actually, anywhere this could be the case, water is the first item needed for survival. Humans can go 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. When you're doing search and rescue, all of these things naturally are running through your mind. Can someone survive? How do they do it? I mean, there's all this knowledge that we have that's very, very intense. And if you've been through any kind of wilderness training, you also are running through, what do I need to do? How can I survive? So on and so forth. You and a friend named Peter ended up climbing a mountain and had a very, very powerful experience, almost 12,000 feet up on a mountain. Share that story.
Well, we were climbing up a peak called Lamotte Peak in October. This is a mountain in the Uintas. It's a Rocky Mountain kind of a mountain. It was an area that I had been in many times, but I'd never been to the top, and I wanted to be to the top of this mountain. And on the cover of the book, there's a picture of a person going up. This is a picture taken on this trek. This is me going up this mountain, and you can see coming right at me a huge winter snowstorm, the first storm of the winter. And I'm completely oblivious to it because I want to get to the top of that mountain. Well, my good friend keeps saying, we need to go back, we need to go back. And 500 feet from the top, we turn around and go back. And it's too late by then, and we get stuck in this big snowstorm. And suddenly you can only see 15 feet. And all of this terrain that was once familiar to you is completely oblivious. It's completely obscured. Mm-hmm. And we didn't know where we were. We had no idea. And then suddenly you get in your pack, you look for the compass. Oh, I didn't bring a compass. Oh, I didn't bring a map because it was all familiar. I didn't bring what I needed. And then shame flooded into my mind, oh, I'm going to be out here in the woods. I'm going to be the one who's rescued. People are going to laugh at me. I'm going to be in the media. My students won't think I'm smart anymore. All of these things start hitting you. So you start seeing fewer options. You are driven by history because you go, you know, this worked before, and I'm going to just do what has worked before rather than dealing with the specific situation. You're overwhelmed with shame, and you want to get small and not communicate as much. And I experienced all of that, and it helped me. And it just was 20 or 30 minutes that we were lost. We eventually figured out where we were and were able to get down off of this mountain. But it was amazing to me how quickly you can move from a nice day, sunshine, going up the mountain, doing what we want to do, to I am lost, I don't know where I'm going, and I am inadequate, and I shouldn't have ever come out here, and why did I do this stupid thing? And so that shame thing is real important because it's very, very toxic for us.
That it is on so many levels. It is very toxic. And one of the points that you bring out in your book is that most of us are not self-sufficient. This is not something in our culture that is encouraged. Now, that may sound like a blatant negative statement, but it is really very true. I was having a conversation with a gentleman not too long ago who was raised in an area not unlike Fairbanks, Alaska. Very rugged. His family had to hunt for their food. This is a gentleman in his 80s, and he was saying how they had to do things. They had to learn how to work in their environment. They had to deal with certain realities. And it was part of his training when he was growing up. He said, it's just what we did. Well, as he went on in life, he was able to cope with a lot of things that other people just didn't have a clue about, that had not had that kind of upbringing, that kind of an environment. And you make a comment about how in our world today, technology doesn't protect us from being overwhelmed. Sometimes it enhances our sense of being overwhelmed by too much information and not enough meaning. We don't understand the content. And this, I find, as a counselor, has been the case with many, many, many people. It's really a tough thing. A lot of people are afraid of being by themselves. And if you're out in a wilderness area, you're by yourself, or even if you have a buddy, that really comes home. That comes home to roost big time, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. And I think what you said about self-sufficiency is very, very important. It's something that wilderness experiences or even travel and those kind of things teach us how to do, is to be by ourselves, to be self-sufficient, and it also teaches us a deep appreciation of those who are around us and love us. One of the things that search and rescue work has just done for me that is very overwhelming, and I think of it in a very personal way, is that when somebody is lost, and about half of the people we look for who are lost want to be lost, they are going out there with intention to do harm. We hear in the news the other side of the people who want to be rescued, but the ones you don't hear about in the news are the ones who are out there and don't want to be found. And there are just so many people like that. But when somebody goes out in the woods and they don't want to be found, in every state in this country, in every county in this country, there are a group of people, search and rescue workers, strangers, who will risk their lives to come after those people. And most of them are volunteers. Most of them have trained at their own expense. There are ministers. There are counselors. There are compassionate people in a family. There are so many people who want that person to be found, even though they may be suffering from the delusion that they're no longer wanted in this society. And it is just amazing to me that you go into a search area, it's called the IC, the Incident Command Center, and there will be 200 people, most of them strangers, who are going to spend the next 3, 4, 5, 10, however many days it takes, to find this person. And doesn't that say something about what kind of people we are?
That is an incredible statement. And I think that it's also incredible that over half of the people that are lost want to be lost. I think that that's a very, very powerful statement. And the other side of the coin that you've shown is significant as well. I think too many times we're so isolated. We are bombarded with so much, what do I want to call, staged information that is then choreographed according to whatever an agenda may be. We don't often, unless we're involved in something like search and rescue, see what you have been able to share in your book. A part of one of the stories that you had here was about King's Peak Promise. Now, King's Peak is Utah's highest mountain. And you were with a group of kids and adult leaders. You were all prepared for this hike, but it ended up being an adventure that had a very positive ending to what could have been disastrous, and there was a sad note to it, too. Would you share that story?
Well, this was years before I got involved in search and rescue, and I was with a youth group on this mountain, and it's very common for young people to climb this mountain in the summer times. And there's also a weather pattern in that elevation at 13,000 feet where you get a fair amount of rain in the afternoons in the summertime. And we had tried to climb the mountain one day and weren't able to do it and waited until the next day. And it was this beautiful blue sky day, and I got up early in the morning, and I was ready before everyone, and I was sort of the guide, and so I took them up. I started up the trail, and then they came up behind me. And I got up on this third of the way up area where I could see them coming up behind me, up this little valley, and I could see the peak, and it was just this beautiful day. And other groups were passing me by and saying, "We're going to the top of the mountain," and people were excited, and they started coming up and getting closer and closer to me, and this little cloud sort of wafted over, and the wind changed directions, and I just thought, you know, there was something wrong, and it just felt, I didn't have a logic for it yet. But mm-hmm. there, it just felt like it was time to get off that mountain. And so we turned the group around. There was a lot of resistance and anger. You know, "Hey, we want to go to the top." No, we're gonna head down. And I pushed them and turned them around, and we headed down. Before we got back to our camp, it was thunder and lightning everywhere. And it was the worst I've ever experienced. We climbed into our tents. I had to hike out immediately. I had to continue to hike out so that I could meet parents and tell them that we wouldn't be at the one trailhead, but we'd be at the other. And as I hiked out, I heard a helicopter going overhead, and it was a rescue helicopter that was rescuing. Four boys were hit by lightning, and two of them were killed on that peak that day. And it just, as I went back and thought, why did we make that decision to go back? What was in that for me? Some of it, I think, was just we call it retrospective sense-making. You look behind and make sense of what happened before. And I think it was just very, very subtle things, changes in the weather or changes in the wind direction, a cloud, a feeling of electricity in the air, those kind of things that I picked up on, and I was very grateful that we were able, that our boys were safe at the end of that day, and very sad that two boys did not come home.
You talk about the green bandana. How are the bandanas used by search and rescue?
Well, that's actually just a code that when you are talking on the radio in a search situation, you don't really know who's listening, and so you want to be discreet. And there are a lot of different codes like this, but one of the codes that we use is if you say, "I found a green bandana," it means I found a live victim and they're fine. If you say, "I found a yellow bandana," you're saying, "I found a injured victim and they need medical care." And if you say, "I found a red bandana," it means you found a deceased victim. And that's a way of saying something on the radio that maybe the family will not understand, and they can be dealt with in a more sensitive way if they're listening. So we're mostly concerned for the family there, but it's also there are some other issues. You don't know if you found the right victim at that point, and so there's a lot that has to happen. I'm sorry for using the word victim, but it's the term that we often use. We should say subject, But
Perhaps, but they were a victim, if not of their own fears of being lost. There's so many components that go in, and sadly, many times they succumb, but there are those wonderful stories where they did not. You have some absolutely fabulous stories about search and rescue. This is an extremely compassionate, in-depth look at this wonderful, wonderful group of people, search and rescue, of which my guest Scott Hammond is a part. His book is called Lessons of the Lost. It is anything but a depressing read. If nothing else, it is something that is very positive. It is very, very empowering to whoever reads it to realize that you, by being who you are, can make a difference in the life of someone else. Being a stranger doesn't make any difference. Scott's out there. He may not know any of the people he goes to look for, but he, along with the hundreds of other people that are dedicated into this wonderful service with their fabulous dogs who just love to do this, it's really very significant. They never get a penny for anything that they do. They do it because it is what they want to do. And I'm very grateful, Scott, that you've been my guest today. Your website is lessonsofthelost.com, lessonsofthelost.com. Be sure and check it out. Scott, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much, Donna. You have a wonderful show. Thank you so much.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Check out Lessons of the Lost. You won't regret it. We'll be right back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008, if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be just more than happy to do that. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and of course then after that, let me tell you what I perceive, and then you can ask me a question about anything you like. All right, we have a listener. Let's show you how it's done on the Donna Seba Show. Welcome, welcome, welcome. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, I'm calling from Boston.
Well,
and
I hope
my
this... Hi, and your first name?
Pam.
Okay, now Pam, I need to let you know there's just a tiny bit of a time delay. So when I finish saying something, just take a short breath and then start in talking. That way we won't overlap with each other. Okay, Pam, the first thing I'm looking at is your physical health. There is something here about your eyes that you need to have a checkup there. There is a pressure that I'm sensing behind the left eye. It's not real serious, but it's indicating to me that there's something else going on in the body. So I would like to encourage you to be attentive to your body. If you need to go in for a checkup, just be aware you want to take care of this chassis of yours. So let's take the attitude of checking up on things, making sure everything is in balance. And if there's anything that's a little bit out of balance, great. Do what you have to do to bring it into play. You have got two very intensive years ahead of you. And the reason that these 2 years, 2012 and 2013, are going to be this way is because there is a lot that is being cleaned out of your life experience. You're like a snake shedding an old skin. And so it's a process, just like the snake has to rub against rocks and has to go through all kinds of, what I would say, irregular surfaces so the skin can be pulled off. And it can be liberated from whatever has been constricting it. So you are going through this process right now. It's not good. It's not bad. It is just what you're having to go through. So don't get stuck in the drama. Look at what's happening. Say, okay, if I have to take care of this and do that and do the other, I'll do it. No biggie. Let's just get the show on the road. Do at the same time, though, think about the shifts and the changes that you want to see implemented in your life. Because while you're shedding this old skin, it's important for you to replace a patterning that supports you that is one that you enjoy. Let me give you a simplistic example. Let's say you really had to change a dietary exercise program. You wanted to do something in a different way that was going to be more conducive to the lifestyle that you want. So instead of doing something, let's say in the afternoon, maybe you're doing it in the morning, and you're consistent with it, and you are replacing that's going to serve you better with positive reinforcement. It's going to take time. You're going to have to adapt to this. You're going to have interference with it. You're going to have perhaps people that are going to say, oh, that's a waste of your time. You don't know what you're doing. You just are learning how to trust yourself and not be too concerned about what other people are thinking, what they say. You're just going to trust yourself knowing that you're doing what's right for you. And believe it or not, everything's going to come out quite smoothly, but it's not going to feel like that sometimes during this year and next. So be patient with yourself. Take it one day at a time. Don't make mountains out of molehills. Just look at the change. Say, all right, if this is what I need to do, this is what I need to do. And just move easily into that other direction. You don't need to be at war here. And these 2 years are going to go by like the wind. So how you manage your time is very, very important. Do you have a question for me?
Yes. Well, thank you. Whatever you told me is really, really true. And actually, this is a good suggestion that I have to just smoothly go through it. There are a lot of changes in my life right now. The question I have is, it might sound real kind of nutty, but I have to ask, this number that I see everywhere, this certain number is just kind of like mind-boggling, and it shows up every direction that I look and everything I see. That's kind of driving me crazy, and I would like to know what this number is telling me, what I need to do with this information. That is
all
kind
right.
of like a little mind-boggling well, for me.
What I would say to you relative to the number, is it a single number? Is it a multiple?
There's multiple. I can tell you if you wish to.
All right. Let me share with you, I'm not a numerologist, so I don't claim to go that way, but let's say you were seeing the number 111, 111,
right.
over and over and over again.
Right.
I have
right.
a very dear friend who, for her, that number has a very spiritual significance. And okay. this has been passed along, and I've read with a number of people, whenever they see that number, it represents...
Right.
To them, an angelic demonstration of some kind. Now, let's say yours
okay.
was an 888 or 232, whatever number combination. Because this is a very
right.
personalized experience for you, I would encourage you to investigate the study of numerology. Because the reason, there's a couple of aspects to this. When you are noticing something consistently, it is because there is something in your mind, in your own psyche, that is seeking it out. And in your seeking it out, the number is a symbol of what this is that you're seeking. So once you recognize what it is, then you're going to find that there is this continuing synchronicity, but it will have a different meaning
right.
for you. With my friend, Mary Ellen, when she sees 111, she says whenever there's an emergency or something that goes on, when the numbers will just come up. She said it's amazing to her. But when they do, for her, it's a positive affirmation. So you don't need to go crazy
okay.
over this. You just need to come from a different positioning.
See.
Because what happens so many times with people is that that which they want information about sometimes is relayed in a item, a number, a symbol of some kind that will continuously repeat itself until it gets your attention. The mind is an incredible
right.
thing. Am I making sense?
Yes. Yes, you are. Yes, absolutely.
Good. Because for you, this number, whatever it is, what I'd like for you
right.
to do is take the attitude of saying, I need to understand what this is, because your higher self, I call it the God self, is using
yes.
this to get your attention, and obviously it has your attention, because you're seeing it frequently. You'll go, wow, how come that keeps popping up? What's going on here? So it's time
yes,
for you...
Yes.
to start doing some study. It's time for you to start investigating the meaning of numbers. Let's say it was the
yes.
number 8. If
I did. I did look up, and if I understand what this number mean, the meaning of this number, but I'm kind of confused what this number is meaning toward me, what this number is telling me. I think that's where I'm kind of a little bit disconnected.
All right, now if you've studied that, I would say study more than one source with a number. Now, let me
okay.
give you an example. You have, let's say the number 8. Now, if you put the number 8,
yes.
8 is two loops, right? And if you go to make a number 8, usually it just, you loop the upper loop and the bottom loop together. Now, if you put a line between the upper and lower level, it can represent the balance of the spiritual with the physical. However, if you turn the number 8 on its side, you also have the sign of infinity, which means unlimited. So,
yes.
depending on what the number is, you need to be able to let go of the analytical side. You need to do the studying of the numbers. Get different people's interpretations. Then have your meditation time and ask the question, how does this apply to me? Because what you're trying to do is put it into a little box. And this maybe has a bigger definition than what you have read relative to you. It will have a different application. So part of what's going on here, Pam, is you are going through a process of learning how to think differently than what you have done in the past. You're expanding your capability of understanding things on a different level. So that's what this is.
Okay.
That's what's going on.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I don't have a specific answer for you because apparently you need to find this yourself. You need to work through this yourself. Sort of like going to college after being in high school. So you're moving on
to
a different level. Pam, I'm going to have to take a break, dear. I want to thank you for your call.
Okay, thank you so much for your help. It does make sense. Thank you.
You're very welcome, and give us
Bye-bye.
A call back and let us know what you find out about that.
I will. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Pam. You have a wonderful day. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. If you want to give me a buzz, you can. 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now. Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like a chat. 888-627-6008. We have another caller on the line. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and what part of the country are you calling in from?
Angeline Young. I'm calling from San Francisco, California.
Well, I'm delighted to chat with you, Angeline. Welcome to the show. First thing I'm getting for you is an image of you, and there are some tears on your face. There has been disappointment that still eats at you, and it's a disappointment both in, I think, a level of trust that you had in another person, and you're uptight with yourself. You're very critical of yourself because you think, gee, I should have been smarter. I should have seen this. I should have seen that. I should have seen the other. I would like for you to drop the judgment of yourself on this. And I want you to, whatever this causes inside of you emotionally, where it's eating away and causing self-sabotage of your self-esteem, I want you to realize this is an experience. But you want to look at the facts. If you feel like you should have seen something more clearly, ask yourself, what was it that you didn't want to pay attention to? Why was it that there was this complete sense of trust? Was it something where you just wanted to have a fantasy realized? Maybe what you were feeling in your own mind and your own imagination was so much stronger? Or was it because that you really believed this person? And I think it's important to look at these things and not, again, beat yourself up. Because I really think, number one, you have such a compassionate side to yourself that if you're not careful, you'll end up as a doormat. And to learn how to not be a doormat, sometimes we have to go through experiences that cause us emotional pain. And we need to grow through our immaturity. And this isn't good, it's not bad. It doesn't make you a bad person. Trust me, there are billions of people that go through this. This is a daily occurrence. But what you're wanting to do is to understand more about yourself. And I believe that you are engaging in a journey that one day is going to have you sitting down and writing a book, like many of the people that I feature on my show do. But more than that, you're going to have such a depth of understanding that people are going to want to seek your counsel. So I would like to encourage you, if you have not done it to this date, I would like to encourage you to, one, start reading about effective counseling, neuro-linguistic programming, emotional touch therapy. I would like for you to become acquainted with these subjects because I believe that you are going to become quite a teacher. And you're going to incorporate many different levels of various modalities to empower other people to heal. Now, you're going to go through a journey of your own first, but I would love to see you incorporate education and association with people of integrity, people that have walked the walk in life, people who are an honest representation of wisdom and clarity. This is going to empower you. I'm seeing you standing up on a podium. I'm seeing you talking to groups of people, and you're speaking from your heart. And you are going to be very well received. So you have a fascinating career that's going to evolve in a very unique and unusual way. I want you to invest in yourself. You're going through some challenges right now. You're going to come out of them just fine. But this is part of your education, and that is living life. You cannot become the person I see you becoming by living in a monastery on the top of a mountain and never talking to anybody or experiencing life in the real world. You are going to be able to really accomplish some very special things. But this is part of your growing period where you are discovering who you are on levels that I think are just very, very significant. So though I see the tears, and though I know that there are the disruptions in your life, they are going to serve you well. You're going to grow from this. This is not a bad year for you, but it is a year that has a self-discovery depth to it that I think is going to be more significant than what you can see at this time. Do you have a question for me?
Two. One is, could you repeat what books I need to read?
I would encourage... Okay, excuse me, dear. We overlapped each other a little bit there. There's a little bit of a time delay. What I would suggest is go to your local library. Ask for books on neuro-linguistic programming. The abbreviation is NLP. There is a woman by the name, her first name is Virginia, and for the life of me, I can't see her last name in my mind. It starts with an S. And there are some very, very significant personalities that are known as pioneers in this area of research and knowledge. Emotional touch therapy. And you can also look this up on the web. Go to Wikipedia. You'll find all kinds of information there. What was your second question?
I'm planning on going abroad to teach English. Do you have any advice for me moving forward positively?
I would just say look forward to the journey. What country are you going to be going to?
I think Taiwan.
All right. I would encourage you to go to your library, do research about the culture. You need to have an understanding of the culture. Don't go over with an American attitude that says, gee whiz, I'm just going to wing it here. No, you need to understand the culture. And I would try to find someone who is from Taiwan that can give you an inside track on this. And if you have anyone that you could associate with prior that has had experience in Taiwan, get their feedback. But I think this is a marvelous environment for you to go into. I think it's really going to wake you up to many things. And if you wanted to call me at my office, I would like to share with you some information about an individual that may be able to give you some background on that. So you can call my office.
Yeah!
253-582-5604. Now, hon, I'm out of time. I regret I have to go, but we're at the end of the show.
Okay.
Thank you for calling in. This is Donna Sebo. I'm so sorry we're out of time, but we're going to be back tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day. We'll be chatting here live tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.